It's the Amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
Rico Bronya! Wow, we're almost at 700 episodes. Isn't that crazy? Welcome to episode 699. The New York Mets lose 2 out of 3 to the Cincinnati Reds. They come very close to imploding and getting swept by the Cincinnati Reds. But hey, a win is a win is a win. And in a season in which the Mets haven't had a lot of victories, I'm not going to sit here and be a chooser, as they say, because beggars can't be choosers. But the Mets won a game. It was not easy. They forced the Cincinnati Reds to strand 155 guys on base in the finale of this series. I think the grand total was 17. Devin Williams came very close to imploding, but he didn't implode. He did not implode, and the Mets made 4 runs hold up. And when the Mets score 4 runs, it feels like they scored 50. So they do win a game. That is the good news. They stop the losing streak. That is the good news. They are back to 10 games under 500. I don't think that's good news. But there's a lot to talk about from this series. We will break down all 3 games. We will explain why Carlos Mendoza should still not have a job, despite the fact that they ended the losing streak and won the final game of this series. We will pick a Rico on the star right now. I'm the man right now, I should say. We'll pick a net negative, and we will hear from you with a ton of emails. But this series started in such a depressing way. Because for all the things that have been bad about this Mets season, obviously the win-loss record being number one, I think the other thing that's been so disappointing is what's happened over the last few starts with Nolan McClain. Because Nolan McClain last season was a beacon of hope. And even coming into this season with all the questions about the moves that were made during the offseason, the guys that are here, the guys that are not here, I think there was a lot of excitement about getting to watch Nolan McClain pitch every 5 days. I certainly was a part of that. I made comments many times here on the Rico and on the Fan that I tell my wife, hey, you know what Met game I'm going to? I'm going to the day that Nolan McClain pitches. It's like a holiday. It's like a Matt Harvey day. It's like a DeGrom day. And he got off to a good start. He continued to show that promise that we saw last season. But obviously, you go back to the game against the Washington Nationals, the game in which he was given a big lead. It felt like the Mets were about to go on a winning streak. And yeah, there were some plays that an inch to the left, an inch to the right, specifically the Morabito play, that if it's caught, it changes the complexion of that outing. Either way, Nolan McClain was very hittable. And I thought Monday's start on Memorial Day against a average offensive team in the Cincinnati Reds, but in your own building, on a Monday afternoon where maybe the shadows will be to your advantage at Citi Field with a late start, I thought this was a very important start for Nolan McClain. I was in the building for this game. I took my youngest son. Yes, I guess it follows suit with the whole, hey, Nolan McClain's pitching. I want to be in the building. And I didn't need to see 8 scoreless innings. I don't think any of us needed to see 6 scoreless innings. But what we couldn't see is what we saw. And there is now, I mean, if we're being honest, legitimate concern about Nolan McClain. A 3 1/3 inning, 7-run outing where he allows 2 home runs and basically has to get pulled in the 4th inning because that was not pitch count. That was ineffectiveness. You look at him and say, okay, what's wrong? Is it as simple as his command is off? I mean, his command has been a big issue. You know, you go back to where this outing turned in the wrong direction. He starts the game off by striking out the side and looking brilliant and putting that seed in your head that Nolan McClain may have a dominant night, that it is possible that Nolan McClain may have one of those special days, if you will. Anytime you start a game looking as dominant as he looked in striking out the side, you start to think all those crazy thoughts. He's ahead of Sal Stewart, the leadoff hitter in the 2nd inning, 0-2, and he hit him with a pitch. And sometimes it's that innocent moment, it's that innocent play that causes a game to go haywire. That moment caused the game to go haywire. And it's kind of unexplainable. And command had a lot to do with it. He's ahead 0-2, he hits Sal Stewart. He immediately, on the very first pitch, gives up a base hit to Suarez. He has a long at bat against Nathaniel Lowe. I think he fell behind him 3-0, if memory serves correct. I don't chart that on the scorecard. I just know it was 3-2. And he walks Lowe, and he puts himself in this spot where the bases are loaded and nobody out. And granted, you're facing the bottom of the order, but this was a huge moment for Nolan McClain to try to salvage this thing. And he gets a ground out in which the Mets try to turn a double play. And I thought off the bat, especially with the way the offense is struggling, that Bo Bichette should have thought about coming home, because I thought turning two was unlikely. Obviously, even with this offense, second inning, you have a chance to turn two outs for one run. You probably make that trade. But when you can't turn the double play and now a run scores and there's first and third one out, the odds are pretty high you're giving up a second run. And again, with this offense, you can't afford that, especially off of what we saw in the Miami series where they go out and they score two runs in three games. No one has confidence that they're going to hit anybody. So I guess first guess number one is Bo should have thought about coming home. And then obviously the second issue is that Nolan McClain, we talk about the command issues he had in the second inning, bounces a wild pitch and hands the Cincinnati Reds a second run. And even with that inning, and even with the way that inning turned on the hit batsman and the walk to Lowe and the double play that's not turned, Nolan McClain still has a chance to put together a decent outing. Because as bad as this Met offense is, and yes, it would suck to lose 2-1, Nolan McClain could still go out there, go six innings, two runs, and at least we'll bitch on the Rico, or every Met fan on social media will just complain about the offense. It doesn't have to be about Nolan McClain. Third inning, he comes out, gets the first two guys out. All right. Looks like he could settle in, and he gives up a bomb of a home run to J.J. Bleday. Absolute bomb to right center field. Again, it's 3-0. The Met offense isn't exactly showing you much. But if Nolan McClain can go six innings, you could accept a six-inning, three-run performance. Where it all went to hell was that fourth inning. Walks the leadoff hitter, gives up a rip double to Nathaniel Lowe, gives up a two-run single ahead of the count to Spencer Steer, and then falls behind Tyler Stevenson, who hits the two-run home run and really, I mean, puts the hammer down, as Gary Cohen likes to say. And you knew it was a matter of time that Nolan McClain was going to come out of this game. This was another bad performance by him. I hope he's not injured. I don't think there are any signs that he is. I don't think that necessarily he needs to be sent down, as crazy as that conversation is. I think with where this team is, and the kind of pitch Nolan McClain is, I think he's got to fight his way through it. I think this is a part of learning. Adjustments are made. There's tape on you. People have seen you. You're facing the league, in some cases, a second and third time. So I think this is about Nolan McClain figuring it out. This is a part of the adjustments of being a major league starting pitcher. So I'm not recommending anything rash. I'm not sending him down. Unless there's an injury we don't know of, I'm not phantomizing L-ing him. He's just got to go out and be better. It's as simple as that. But it was concerning, and it is concerning. And I look at his next start, which is over the weekend against the Marlins, and I circle it again and say, we need to see not necessarily eight scoreless innings. That would be great to get back to his dominating self. But how about his solid self? Because these last few starts that McClain has, he's looked not dominant, and obviously his last two starts have been just flat out bad, to where his ERA is now in the mid fours. But that's what happens. You have a couple of bad starts and it can snowball on you. And if you were in the ballpark on Monday, and I got a few emails we'll read about people in the ballpark or people watching the game live with their reactions. I kind of like doing that now here on the Rico, where we can kind of get back in the mode of a game by hearing from people as that game was going on. You knew the game was over. And that is a very depressing feeling. You spend money to go to a stadium. You spend time to go out to the ballpark. See, you're at home on Memorial Day. You shut the TV off. It's kind of simple. And I know there's a lot of people that are doing that. A lot of people who are checking out on this team by saying, I can't watch this crap anymore. I've gotten plenty of emails from those saying that this podcast, the Rico, us, we're updating them on how this season is going. Which, that's a way to get your Met news. That's a way to get your results. Let me download the Rico and see what that clown is saying now. But if you're at Citi Field on Memorial Day, which turned out to be weather-wise a gorgeous day, it was in the mid-70s, the sun came out, it probably felt better than actuality because the weather over the weekend was so bad. But if you're in the building and it's 7-0 and this offense is obviously showing you no signs of life, what do? You walk around the park? You just stuff yourself with food? Like, what do? It was interesting. I took my youngest to this game. And I gave him a special surprise in that I took him to the really fancy seats. And the reason I took him to the fancy seats is because the prices dropped, which is, I guess, one of the positives of the Mets being terrible. Went on SeatGeek. It was like 2 hours before the game, and the all-you-could-eat seats behind home plate had become relatively affordable. So he's having the time of his life. I mean, he's shoving his face with ice cream and hot dogs and food. And meanwhile, I'm sitting there and I'm looking around in a 7-0 game in the bottom of the fourth inning with an offense that shows no sign of life and Juan Soto not being in the lineup, which was a buzzkill 2 days in a row with this mysterious illness. What do they call it? The Miami flu? And you're trying to convince yourself, well, they can come back. There's a way this can be a game. You're facing Nick Lodolo, who, granted, it was a small sample size of games. He had only made 3 starts prior to this one, but had been hittable, had been struggling. And, you know, it was just so depressing. Like, Carson Bench leads off the game, gets hit by a pitch. He gets caught stealing to end the first inning. They get a one-out hit by A.J. Ewing in the second. And I'm going to assume that Tyrone Taylor was bunting for a hit because there's no way when your bottom half of the order is Nick Morabito and Brett Beatty and Luis Torrens, you're bunting for a sacrifice. And something looked off with Tyrone Taylor on that bunt. We'd obviously find out 3 innings later that he has this physical ailment and now he's going to be on the IL and God knows when we'll see him again. They get back-to-back singles behind in the count in the third inning from Benjamin Bichette. And here comes Mark Vientos to swing at the first pitch and ground out. They get the leadoff man on in the fourth. Nothing from that. Ewing, Taylor, and Morabito make out. And Nick Morabito ended up getting sent down after this game. He did not look ready for the major leagues. And that sucks because I was calling for him to come up. And certainly when you're having a year like this, you'd rather see young players than veterans. But he at times looked very overwhelmed. They get a rally in the fifth, 2-on-2 out. Here's that guy again. Here's Mark Vientos. What does he do? He strikes out. Marcus Semien hits a home run, gives you like a glimmer of hope. They get a run in the seventh inning on an RBI ground out by Bench, but again, put 2 guys on base, 7-2 game. Here comes Marcus Semien, hit away from getting back into it, and in a big spot, he grounds out to third base. And that was it. That was it for the offense. Like, they had their chances. I think I just described all of them. And 2 runs for them is basically their average. That's the way it feels. But the lineup, and I'm not even going to kill Mendy for this. I got plenty of other things on the Rico today I'll crush Mendy about. The lineup for Monday, yes, it was bad. Yes, Marcus Semien hitting cleanup feels like an insult. Yes, that's not good. But with Juan Soto out of the lineup, what are you going to do? I mean, I guess you could hit A.J. Ewing cleanup. I guess you could hit, I'm looking at the rest of the lineup, like, who do you want to hit cleanup? Tyrone Taylor, Nick Morabito, Brett Beatty, Luis Torrens. Like, the options were just horrendous. But I admit that when I'm sitting there and I'm writing this lineup down and I'm saying, okay, here's the lineup I'm going to score today and I see this, it's like, come on. It's disgusting. I can't look at this. Let me read some of your emails from this game and others. This is from Kershawn, who says, Hoff and Evan, I'm at this game. This is Memorial Day, game one of this 3-game series against the Reds. I'm at this game, and it's the top of the fourth inning, and I have given up on Nolan McClain. He is not the second coming of Jacob deGrom. maybe in a few years, but not now. We anointed him as if he was the new ace, and he's not. So let's just stop for now. He's just a guy on this team who isn't performing like the rest of them. No more passes, no more excuses. We just got swept by the Marlins, and this is the trash he puts out there. I'm done, and I'm leaving. And as I'm writing this, boom, two-run home run, and now it's 7-0. I wonder if he left. He never updated. He never wrote another email saying, hey, I left. What a great decision. And in this case, it would have been a great decision. So when this game was ending in the ninth inning, probably because it was Memorial Day and I think a lot of people, you know, wanted to get home, the place was more empty than normal for a nice weather day. And it was about a three-hour game, so it was right around 7 o'clock at night. And I never leave games early. But I did have the thought cross my mind, you know what? I'm with my five-year-old. He's got a bedtime. He's got school the next day. I got to think about this. And I looked at him, and here's what I said. I don't think this counts as leaving early. I never did leave early. I said, how you feeling, Spence? You think we should leave? And he's like, we never leave games early. And I said, okay, I'm not arguing with you. And considering we wouldn't leave Knicks Nets when the Knicks were up by 50, how the hell could we leave Mets Reds at 7-2? But I know many others did. Nick was also at the game. Nick writes, I'm at this game and I can't take it anymore. This has to be rock bottom. We have a race on the mound on a holiday and it's 7-0 Cincinnati in the fourth inning. Mendy's going to get Nolan as we speak. Why do we still bother showing up? Concession prices are out of control. The ballpark experience continues to get worse and worse. And the team is sinking faster than my dating life. I've never felt this disconnected from the Mets. Even in lost seasons like 17, you had some likable, familiar faces. Outside of 2024, the Mets have felt like a disaster waiting to happen. Yeah, I think the connection with some of these players obviously doesn't exist. I think, not to give you a positive, but to try to find a connection, it's probably in this moment with the younger players. It's probably the connection you may feel with Carson Bench, who we watched make the team out of spring training, get off to a really bad start, and start to show a little bit of promise. Maybe the connection is starting to form with a guy like A.J. Ewing. But I understand it, and I know that during the offseason, which is probably going to be an incredibly long offseason, considering we're staring a lockout straight in the eye, there's going to be a lot of creative Rico Brunas, and I think one of them will be ranking where this lasts or where this exists in bad seasons in Met history, because it's obviously up there. The Viento strikeout in the fifth inning where the ball hits him and then he delays and then runs to first base. I admit from where I was sitting, I couldn't tell it hit him. So when Viento swung and missed, and remember, this is with two on and two out in the fifth inning. At this point, it is 7-0, but you're hoping for a rally. I mean, you're begging for it, especially being at the game. When Viento swung and missed, I'm screaming, run. Like, dude, you have a chance to have a gimme. Going to get bases loaded for Marcus Semien. Maybe we have something here. You know, maybe Marcus Semien runs into one here. And when Viento's ran, and then you see the umpire very quickly signal, no, no, no. And he kind of signals like it hit somebody. I don't know what he was signaling. I thought he was signaling it hit him, which obviously doesn't matter. You're a part of play. But I quickly went to my phone to see the replay. It's not that Mark Vientos did anything wrong necessarily by running, because you never know, right? The umpire could miss it. Just because the ball hit Vientos, and obviously it's a dead ball once it hits him, you swing and a miss, you're out, but the ball is dead. You can't run. You can't advance, you know, things like that. I don't blame him for running because, again, the umpire could miss it. I blame him for sucking. That's where the anger comes from. The anger comes from Mark Vientos came up in the third inning with two on and two out, and he grounded out. He came up with two on and two out in the fifth inning, and he struck out. And he struck out on a pitch that hit him. That's the problem. I mentioned Tyrone Taylor left this game with a hip issue, and I was listening to Mendy in the postgame. He made it very clear. You're not going to see him for a while. So I say this a lot when it comes to injuries. Forget the player exists. Now, in Tyrone Taylor's case, it's not that difficult. He is what he is. He's a fourth outfielder. I mean, a valuable piece. I'm not trying to demean him completely, but it's not like losing Francisco Lindor. It's not the same. We did get roster moves after this game. Sending down Nick Morabito, I was mixed about, because he does look overwhelmed, as I mentioned before. He is not look good at the plate. He has struck out. It feels like 80% of his at-bats. You can see how he can be a good defender, but he's not performing well enough to play consistently. And if he's not going to play consistently, you don't want him up here. When they first called him up, I laid out an avenue for where he can play consistently. But there comes a point where you have to earn it. And granted, it's a small amount of at-bats, small amount of plate appearances, but I understand why the Mets would look at his performance and say, you know what, he's better off playing every day in AAA. We'll probably see him again sooner rather than later, but I get optioning Nick Morabito. The Jonathan Pintero one, since he had pitched so well, including in this game. Remember, McClain comes out in the fourth inning, and so they need to get five outs from Austin Warren, and they got eight outs from Pintero, and he looked great. And in Pintero's two appearances, he's looked outstanding. This is a numbers game. This is we're activating A.J. Minter, who's ready to come back. It's about time. They've given him a lot of money to not do much. Who can we send down, and who do we have to get rid of? And you have Austin Warren, who had options. You have Pintero, who had options. Warren has done more. He's been here longer. And so the thought is he'll go down, he'll pitch consistently for 10 days, and then there's a really good chance he's going to be back. A very good chance he's going to be back. But it is frustrating when you see someone pitch as well as Pintero pitched in his brief appearances to say, congratulations, you're going back to AAA. But you also knew when Mendy asked him to get eight outs in this game, that usually means you're going back to AAA. Thank you for those eight outs, but we'll see you later. Frustrating day at the ballpark on Monday, but they make all of these roster moves and they come back Tuesday with a chance to break the losing streak. A couple of issues, because Tuesday's game, game two of this series, featured many, many things, including Carlos Mendoza probably getting himself fired if the owner was, you know, paying attention. And the team president was paying attention or not too prideful to say, hey, maybe I should make a managerial change. We'll get to that in a few minutes. But my first critique of Mendy, because I thought Tuesday was rough for him, was starting David Peterson. David Peterson has had a level of success as the bulk guy. Now, in his last start, they didn't use him as the bulk guy. They used him as a traditional starter because the Nationals are very left-handed. And I got it. It made sense. Like, okay, I get that he's pitching well in this bulk role, but this lineup is more conducive for David Peterson starting right away. Totally good. Why was he starting Tuesday? The Cincinnati Reds put together a lineup that featured 8 of 9 hitters right-handed. The number two hitter in their lineup is Ellie De La Cruz, a hell of a right-hand hitter. Why? Why wouldn't you go with the same strategy that had some levels of success, which is to start Waskar Brazoban, to open with Waskar Brazoban, and then pitch David Peterson? Now, the counter is going to be, well, Evan, what about Wednesday? They were going to do that with Brazoban and Tan. I don't think you needed to do that with Jonah Tan. And if you only want three innings from Tan, which is what he did in the finale, which we'll get to a little bit later on, you could still start him and then start going to your bullpen, especially knowing you have an off day on Thursday. I think David Peterson and Jonah Tong are very different. Very different. Especially in the case of the lineup matchup for Peterson and the fact that the Reds are very right-handed. And also, if you disagree and say, nah, we need to use an opener for Jonah Tong, use Austin Warren. Or how about this crazy idea? Use Brazoban in back-to-back games. He can do that. He has pitched in back-to-back games. So issue number one, even before this game really started, was the fact that David Peterson was starting. Then you've got David Peterson's actual start. I mean, this was, he was as lucky as humanly possible. Think about the first time through the order, what David Peterson did. Walk, strikeout, hit, walk, double, hit, hit, walk, hit. So, yeah, eight of the nine hitters all got on base. Now, if you didn't see the game, because like I mentioned, there are some Ricoers who are like, I didn't see the game. I don't want to watch this crappy team. I'm downloading the Rico Bronya. Can you please tell me what happened? Hey, Evan, how the hell did he get outs if he only got one guy out? Well, one was a caught stealing, Blake Dunn, two batters in. And then the last one was an outfield assist by MJ Melendez. So two of the three outs in the first inning, where he did give up two runs, came from a caught stealing and an outfield assist. If not for the existence of Luis Torrens and MJ Melendez, David Peterson may not have gotten out of the first inning. That's how bad he was. And to make matters worse, he puts the first three guys on base in the second and then gets a 1-2-3 double play. So through 10 batters, eight of them got on base and he got five outs. Double play, caught stealing, outfield assist. And oh yeah, he struck out Ellie De La Cruz. It don't make any sense. So he was fortunate to get through the second inning, bases loaded, nobody out, not giving up a run. He pitched a 1-2-3 third inning. I'm sitting there in the fourth inning thinking, holy crap, somehow David Peterson has given up five hits. He's walked three guys and he's only given up two runs. Great. Good for you, David. Take advantage of this. Go five innings, give up two runs. And again, even if the Mets offense continues to do nothing, we won't blame you. And then the fourth inning was a disaster. Gave up three consecutive hits, including a bloop hit to Tyler Stevenson. And then you've got the other Mendy moment, if you will. And that is with second and third and two outs in the fourth inning of a 3-0 game, and Ellie De La Cruz is at the plate. Yes, Ellie De La Cruz struck out and he grounded out in his first two at-bats. And yes, De La Cruz struck out four times on Monday. But he is still the Reds' best hitter. He is still Ellie De La Cruz. And when you have a base open, I think you got to walk him. And if you're not going to walk him, you got to pitch around him. And that's not what happened. He jumped on the first pitch and ripped a two-run double. And I think we all kind of figured at 3-0 they were going to lose. But at 5-0, you really knew they were going to lose. So another issue with the manager. But the real issue came on the base hit, in which he did not back up home plate. That would occur in the sixth inning, and that would occur as his day was ending. He actually started the sixth inning, which is crazy to think about, but hey, they're trying to get innings from their pitchers. And he had allowed five runs at the time. He gives up a leadoff hit, he gives up an RBI double, and he doesn't back up home on a play in which the throw is made home on the RBI double by Tyler Stevenson. And it was so noticeable. Like, there are a lot of things, little things in baseball you may not notice as it's happening, especially if it doesn't turn into a big deal. But this was so noticeable, the crowd booed very loudly. And while they were booing because Peterson gave up the hit, they were also booing because they saw he wasn't backing up the catcher. And it turned into an extra base. It turned into Stevenson going to third. It was a joke of errors. What do they call that? A comedy of errors. So if you didn't hear it, and hopefully I'll be able to hear it because I've had some audio issues hearing Hoff, and hopefully I'll be able to hear the clip. But even if I don't, I know the clip. So Hoff, just signal to me when it's done. I want to play you guys what Ron Darling said, because this definitely got a lot of attention. If you were watching the game on TV, you heard it. But I thought it was pointed. It was very critical of this manager and this coaching staff, but I thought it was very, very necessary. So I don't know if I'll hear it, but ladies and gentlemen, here's Ron Darling from the SNY broadcast.
If you don't understand it, David Peterson, that really tells me that coaches really don't have as much influence as the players as they think they have, because someone should rip someone at some point, but they don't, because They don't want to upset anyone. You have to back up bases every single time.
You don't think that'll be addressed after the game? At all?
It might be, but not addressed the way it should be addressed.
Because if it was
addressed, Gary, it wouldn't happen. It happens every game. We just don't point it out.
Yeah. I mean, that is... it's pointed stuff. And I'm glad he did it, especially when he says, like, you may not have even seen all the times they don't cover home. Like, all the mistakes that are made. And we see so many mistakes from this team. And that's where, for everyone out there who says, this is not Mendoza's fault, this is David Stearns' fault. First of all, it is David Stearns' fault. I think we all know that. I think that this roster is a problem. He has not built a good roster. He's made a lot of bad decisions. We all know that. But this is on Mendoza. This is on the field manager. When guys don't know what to do, when guys are consistently screwing up, that's on the manager. Like that's who it's on. And I appreciate, and I think we all do, that Ron Darling would say that, because, you know, it's like we're going crazy sometimes. It's like, oh, we're just the crazy fans who don't know anything, that we're ripping the manager. Look, there are certain things that's on the manager. There's a lot of things that aren't. Marcus Semien being washed up is not on Carlos Mendoza, right? The decision for certain guys to not be here, who played all the time and replaced them with guys who are always hurt, is not on the manager. He is only dealing with the roster that he has, and I accept that. But that on Tuesday is on him. And Hoff, I appreciate it, because you got to verbally clue this for me, because I can't hear anything, unfortunately. But after the game, Carlos Mendoza is asked about talking to David Peterson. And I'm telling you, when you combine the mistakes this team has made, when you combine the criticism that Darling laid out there, and then you combine it with this answer from Carlos Mendoza, I would have fired him weeks ago. I don't know how he survived Tuesday. That's why I make these comments that the owner's not paying attention and the team president just doesn't know how to fire a manager, because he's never done it in his career. Because for an underachieving team, and to have an embarrassing moment like Tuesday and have this answer from the manager, I don't know how the hell he's still out of job. But here's Mendoza after the game, question and answer on David Peterson not backing up behind home plate.
Willis, how do you, or do you, or have you already addressed Peterson not backing up there?
It can happen. It can happen. Obviously, he knows that. There's no excuses for it. I haven't talked to him about it, but obviously there's going to be a conversation. He knows he made a mistake, but there's no excuses there.
I mean, when are you going to tell him? When are you going to tell David Peterson, hey, that's unacceptable? I thought that was such a joke on Tuesday. And that's what's on the manager. That's the stuff that falls on the field manager. And as Darling pointed out, and it's so true, they make mistakes all the time. And when you're not good, and the Mets are not a good team, you can't make mistakes like that and have no one hold you accountable. And I think that number one is on the manager. It's obviously on the coaching staff. And as of right now, I mean, the man from Milwaukee, David Stearns, has assembled a horrible coaching staff. I mean, can we be honest about that? You know, I'm sorry. The results are the results. And I always like to be careful when talking about coaches. I always hate saying, oh, fire the hitting coach, fire the pitching coach, because we don't know what's happening. Here's what we know is happening. The results. We know the results. And we also have comps. So, for example, the stolen bases that the Mets were so good at a year ago under Anton Richardson, instead of stealing bases at a 90% clip, they're stealing bases at a 67% clip. It's just not the same. You want to tell me it's a coincidence? Okay. I don't buy that. Tiki Barber once taught me there are no such thing as coincidences. So the loss of Anton Richardson, which we tried to not make a big deal when it happened, has been a big deal. Jeremy Hefner took a lot of heat, but also a lot of praise for being a part of the pitching lab. Well, look at the rotation he leads now, and look at the results here. the hitting coach, Troy Snitker, Jeff Albert. Like, forget just the results being bad. How about the approach? How about the amount of times we see 3-1 fastballs taken right down the middle? How about that? So it is a bad coaching staff from top to bottom. Obviously, that may not be on Mendy because he didn't assemble the coaching staff. That's on David Stearns. But the lack of accountability is a huge, huge problem. And you saw it in this game. And it was the same thing with the offense. You know, they fall behind 6-0. I'm sitting there because, and I make this promise, I'm not sitting there as an obligation to the Rico. I'm sitting there because I'm just a stupid fan. Like, I guess in September, football season starts. Maybe it's easier to have your mind check out on games, but I don't check out on games. I'm still going to watch this team as bad as it gets. And sometimes I ask myself, why? There are certainly days in which it's like, why am I doing this? At 6-0 in the bottom of the sixth inning, I'm asking myself, why? But then Juan Soto, it's a 2-run home run. It's like, okay, maybe there's a baseball game. And here's what happened after Soto hit the home run. So now it's 6-2. Okay, sixth inning. Game isn't completely over. A.J. Ewing gets a hit, and they send up Mark Vientos as a pinch hitter for Jared Young, which I don't have a problem with because there's a lefty on the mound, and you say, hey, I'm going to strategize against you. I'm going to go with the right-hander. Let's go to Mark Vientos. And so it's Mark Vientos against Sam Moll, runner on first base, one out. And Mark Vientos bounces into a double play. He is the human rally killer. And I have another clip for you that I think you'll appreciate. This came as a request from Pete in New Jersey, who wrote, end of the seventh inning and I'm disgusted. Please tell me that the coach had told Mark Vientos to not swing at that meatball for strike two. You should hear the polite disgust Howie Rose uses to describe Vientos taking that pitch. Please listen. It's ice cold. I think we can come back, though. I will always believe. Well, Peter in New Jersey was wrong. We did not come back. But I honor his request. Because anytime someone says, hey, listen to this, and they tell me where to find it, I'm going to go find it. So he said, hey, go back to that Vientos at-bat in the sixth inning. Right before Mark grounded into the double play that killed the inning, he took a 3-1 pitch down the middle. Howie Rose was disgusted. He was right. So, ladies and gentlemen, and again, Hoff, you're going to have to give me a verbal cue on it or a visual cue. Here's Howie Rose, disgusted, like all of us are, on Mark Vientos taking a 3-1 fastball right down the middle.
Now the pitch. Fastball over, a call strike now. That's from a left-handed pitcher, and I'm telling you, it cut the center of the plate. And if you're a right-hand batter with power, can you expect a better pitch to hit than that?
Nope.
The greatness of Howie Rose, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, and a great job by Pete because he called it. Pete says, hey, you got to hear Howie Rose. He's disgusted. Well, you're right. He was disgusted. And then, of course, Vientos grounds out. And you know what the Met offense did after that? Nothing. The answer to the question is absolutely nothing. With that said, I thought Sean Manaea was, I don't want to use the word impressive because I don't think Sean Manaea was impressive. I think Sean Manaea was halfway decent. That's how I would describe him. He came in with guys on base, which I don't love, but Mendy has done a lot recently with him. And he got out of it, came in with a runner on third base and nobody out. That was after the David Peterson lack of a backup, infield pop-up, back-to-back strikeouts, walked a couple of guys in the seventh and got through it. The mistake was two outs and nobody on in the eighth inning, gives up three consecutive hits to give the Reds their seventh run. But overall, three innings, three hits, one run, six strikeouts, two walks. We also saw the return of A.J. Minter, who's been a rumor since David Stearns signed him a year ago. Here's where I'm at on Manaea and where I'm at on David Peterson. I'm done looking at David Peterson. And that doesn't mean that they should DFA him. What I would do right now is I would absolutely swap David Peterson for Sean Manaea. I would look at Sean Manaea and say, you know what? You have earned it, and you've earned that opportunity to re-enter the rotation. That doesn't mean I think he's been great. He hasn't been great, but he's been better. He's been pitchable. He's been decent. And more important than anything else, he's been better than David Peterson. And here's the other thing about Manaean Peterson. David Peterson's a free agent at the end of the year. He's not going to be here. Sean Manaea is. He's owed $25 million next year. So forget the age. There's more of a chance of Sean Manaea being on this team next year than David Peterson. Not that I'm plotting for next year with this move. I'm basically saying, who gives me a better chance to win a game if they're on the mound? And Sean Manaea hasn't started a game yet. Like, let's give him that opportunity. So that's where I'm at. I kind of have a feeling that's what the Mets are going to eventually do, because I think they're disgusted by David Peterson. I think they're disgusted by 5 innings, 11 hits, 14 base runners, 14 base runners in 5 innings against David Peterson. That's like tough to do. So I honestly think we're going to see that change made as well. Here's my other issue. I want to take you back to the sixth inning of this game, to the Mark Vientos at bat. I'm taking you back to the same spot, but another aspect of it. I jotted this down because this also annoyed me. So Vientos is up 6-2, runner on first, two outs. He takes the 3-1 meatball down the middle. You heard the call by Howie Rose. A.J. Ewing is the runner at first base, and it's 3-2 to Mark Vientos. How in God's green earth are you not sending A.J. Ewing on 3-2? How? If Vientos strikes out, which he's prone to do, you got yourself a 65 to 70% chance A.J. Ewing steals second base. And if Vientos hits the ball on the ground, it's a double play. If you send him, you keep yourself out of the double play. What'd Vientos do? That's right. He grounded into a very easy 4-6-3 double play. The base runner is A.J. Ewing. The base runner is not some slow base runner. It's not Marcus Semien. So I hated that too. I think you've got to play hit and run in a situation like that. The other tiny thing from this game was the defense. You know, and it comes down to playing smart, smart defense. We had a Bo Bichette error. That was the only error given to the Mets in this game. But there was another big mistake. If you go back to one of David Peterson's brutal innings, it was the fourth inning, an inning where he gave up the two-run double to Eli De La Cruz. When there were two on, it was first and third and nobody out at this point. And he gets Matt McClain to hit the ground ball to third base. For those who saw the game, you're going to remember this. Brett Beatty fields it, tags out the runner at third, J.J. Bleday, and then makes the throw to first base that bounces, and Jared Young can't pick it. They end up reviewing the play at third, and clearly Brett Beatty with the heads-up play by tagging Blade for out number one, and then the throw to first was not bad. It was bounced, but it was an easy bounce. It was a bounce I make at first base. It's an easy one, and Jared Young couldn't hold on to it. And what's that? That's just another example of a guy who I don't even know what Jared Young's natural position is. But Jared Young's got to make that play. And if he makes that play, there's two outs. And not that you could assume the same results, but hey, for the sake of this, I'm going to assume the same results. And he gets out of the fourth inning without giving up a two-run double to Eli De La Cruz. But that's the problem. When you are not a good team, these little things, these little mistakes, they start to add up. And that was a big mistake defensively by Jared Young. BJ from North Bergen wrote in the midst of this game, "While David Peterson did have some good outings recently, I'm sick of watching him and I'm sick of this team. I tend to defend managers all the time, but why the hell are we pitching to Eli De La Cruz with a base open? Unbelievable. The Marlins series was a nail in the coffin to this season. Juan Soto gets challenged with heaters because we get behind, and to his credit, he sees them coming and crushes them, and that's pretty much all we get right now. Nolan McClain is overrated. Freddie Peralta is meh. This team ain't good, and I hate to say it in May, but it's over." I get you. This is from PSL Rob. "People keep saying it's not Carlos Mendoza's fault. Here are some examples of bad decision-making and leadership. Tonight," and of course, we're talking about game two of this series, "in the fourth inning, runners on second and third for the Reds, two out, first base open, Eli De La Cruz, instead of walking him to the open base, They pitched to him. Double, two runs scored. We've had a lot of fielders dropping fly balls and pop-ups, mainly due to not using two hands to catch the baseball. He has not fixed that situation because players are still one-handing the ball. When Lindor was having mental mistakes earlier this year, no consequences, or giving him a day off, and I doubt he even spoke with him because he's a veteran. Clueless at-bats by our hitters, watching hittable pitches get it going by and batters being too tentative. Easy fix. Tell them to be more aggressive. It continues to happen. In addition, he always pinch hits to play the lefty-righty matchup to a fault. Finally, continuing to play Marcus Semien every day when he clearly should not be an everyday player anymore based on his hitting. These are things he could and should take care of. Very fair. Yeah, the Marcus Semien thing is interesting because Marcus Semien has really had a bad offensive season. You know, you could talk about his defense all you want, and his defense has been okay, even if the metrics say he's below average. Watching him every day, he's been fine. But as a veteran player who is not having a good year, you are allowed to give him an off day. You are allowed to say, you know what? I'm going to try something different. And you have options. I mean, you could play Jared Young at third, Brett Beatty at second. You could play A.J. Ewing at second base. Vidal Brujan, not that I love Vidal Brujan, is on this team. You do have the option to say, you know what, Vidal Brujan? We're going to let you play because God knows he doesn't. Thank God they won the last game of this series because I know we could say it can always get worse and it could have gotten worse. I'm always going to hold out hope that as bad as things are, things can always change. Baseball's crazy. It can change on a dime. We always remember 2024. And mathematically, they are in the same spot as they were 2024, even if the team is far worse. So when I'm sitting there on Wednesday for game three of this series, I want the win. I'm not checked out to the point of, who cares? It doesn't matter. And this was one of those games, and I'm surprised by it, where they took an early lead on the Juan Soto home run and the Eric Wagaman home run. There's a funny story about Eric Wagman, but I'm going to save it for Evan and Tiki. So I would say tune in on Thursday, and we will refresh your memory on the Eric Wagman story and why he's, I guess, kind of important in the history of Evan and Tiki. Not the Rico Bronya, so don't worry about it. But if you're interested, we'll get to that on Thursday. So they get the two solo home runs. And considering this is an opener, Jonah Tong Day, they're going to need more than two runs. I was stunned at 2-0 that they did not blow the lead at some point. Not that they were going to lose, because even bad teams win once in a while. I just figured they were going to blow the lead at some point. And the Met pitching, and this starts from Brazoban on, did an incredible job of surviving, of making the big pitch when they needed to. And it goes way back to the first inning when Brazoban put two guys on base and got two big outs, helped out by a really nifty defensive play by Brett Beatty and a strikeout of Eugenio Suarez. It goes to the second inning when Jonah Tong puts two on and two out and gets Blake Dunn the fly out. It goes back to the third inning where Tong unfortunately gave up a run, really bad with words as we get later on. It's instigated. Yeah, I'll go with that. Instigated by his own error on the little comebacker, in which he bounced it over to Mark Vientos. And unfortunately, he gives up the RBI hit to Nathaniel Lowe, but he keeps it right there. Instead of the Reds coming back and tying the game, he gives up the one run. Gets out of a runner on, two-out jam and a long at-bat against Eli De La Cruz. Puts guys on base in the fifth inning, and then Tobias Myers, first pitch, gets Spencer Steer to fly out. They give up a run in the sixth inning. But again, the Reds have the bases loaded and two outs, and Suarez flies out against Brooks Raley. They get a guy on in the seventh inning, and then A.J. Ewing makes a great diving play. They get the leadoff man on in the eighth inning, and Luke Weaver gets through it. And then you got the ninth, where I give Devin Williams a lot of credit because this is an Edwin Diaz outing. Edwin Diaz had a lot of these, and we grew to trust him to get through those where he would come out, have a tough time throwing strikes, put a couple of guys on base. We saw it in the Philly game, the Lindor Grand Slam game in the division series game 4 of 24, where he put the first two guys on base and then got through it. Devin puts the first two guys on base, but we don't have the same trust in him as we had with Edwin Diaz. But to Devin Williams' credit, he strikes out Spencer Steer, walks another guy, P.J. Higgins, to load the bases up with this two-run lead, strikes out Dane Myers, strikes out Blake Dunn, and I think pulls an Edwin Diaz. So good job by Devin. Nice bounce-back performance from the abomination that was Sunday. And really an incredible job by the Met pitching to survive. The Reds left 17 guys on base. That's like something the Mets would have done last season. I thought Jonah Tong was okay. Like, he certainly wasn't dominant by any stretch. He had some command issues walking four. But for the most part, was able to make the big pitch when he needed to. Tobias Myers was shaky. Brooks Raley was even shaky, but ultimately got four outs. Luke Weaver got four outs. Nobody was great. Wasn't like anybody came in and made it look easy. I mean, the Reds had multiple guys on base every single inning. In fact, every inning but three, they put multiple guys on base. I guess that's how it adds up to leaving 17 on. But the offense doesn't do much, but it does just enough. The Soto home run, the Wagaman home run, and then some clutch hitting by Carson Benj. That was probably the most encouraging thing, that Carson Benj continues to grow ever so slightly. He gets the two out, RBI single in the fifth, behind in the count 0-2, gets a two-run single in the seventh. But Mark Vientos, again, all over this place in terms of coming up with guys on base and doing nothing. Came up with the bases loaded in the seventh inning with a chance to break the game open, and he hits a foul pop-up to right field. But it's a win. It's a win. And I am good with wins, okay? They don't happen often with this team. They've lost 10 more times than they've won. So when they win, I'll take it, as ugly as it is. Celebrate this victory and celebrate your highlights with Mio Sparkling Sake, a true crowd pleaser, light, bubbly, and easy to enjoy. Whether you're at Citi Field or your favorite spot, ask for Mio Sparkling Sake by name. A new tradition served chilled, imported from Japan. It's the official sake of Rico Bronya. Enjoy responsibly. All right, let's pick our on-the-man right now, star of the series, and our net negative. I think the net negative, you really have three choices, in my opinion, for the net negative of this three-game series that they did lose to the Cincinnati Reds. Option number one is Nolan McClain. 3 2/3 innings, 7 runs, really giving them no chance to win Monday. That is a prime net negative candidate. Option number two is David Peterson. Now, David Peterson's line isn't as bad as Nolan McClain's because he actually pitched 5 innings. So he secured, what, 4 more outs, and he gave up 1 less run. Not that that's saying much, but David Peterson did have a better pitching line than Nolan McClain, but the embarrassment of not backing up home plate. And really everything about that makes him a worthy candidate, especially because David Peterson, as we talked about, was lucky that it wasn't worse than it was, and he didn't take advantage of it. And then I think the third option is Mark Vientos. You've heard me talk a lot about him over these three games, and he was 1 for 10. He came up in so many big spots. He had the strikeout off of his foot. Like, I think when you look at the offense, because ultimately they scored 8 runs in 3 games. Not as bad as the Marlins series, but not good. And so when the offense continues to struggle, it's only fair that we're going to look at the offensive players and say, all right, who is the poster boy of that? Who's the person you look at and say, I blame him the most? And so I think Mark Vientos is the offensive candidate. So it's really those three guys. I don't know if I'm missing anybody. I apologize. I can't hear Hoff, so you can speak. And then, I don't know. You want to tell me who? Actually, you know what? Text me who your net negative and Rico, I'm the man right now is. That's what we'll do. So it's like for the people that hate Hoff, you don't have to hear his voice. And for the people that love Hoff, you'll get his opinion by him texting me. I'm sorry. I will figure out why I can't hear anything. That's my mission for the next Rico Bronya. But my vote is Nolan McClain. I'm not biased. You know, I'm not going to fanboy this thing. Like, if I'm being perfectly honest about this series and who is the biggest negative, Mark Vientos is very close. Like, it's not David Peterson ultimately, because I thought McLain was worse. Vientos is close. But dude, a 3 2/3 inning, 7-run performance, it's just not acceptable. It's a non-competitive mess. And also, when you give up 7 runs that early in a game, I mean, this game was 7-0 in the 4th inning. So, for the second time this season, I'll make it official. I'll type it down. Nolan McLain, I'm sorry. Not sorry. You're the net negative. So, Nolan is now a 2-time winner, which is amazing, considering I never thought that would be the case. Looking back at other starting pitchers to win this award, here are the other pitchers to win a net negative. David Peterson, he won it. Devin Williams won it as a reliever. Luke Weaver won it. Tobias Myers won it. And now Nolan McLain has done it twice. So congratulations to Nolan McLain. As far as the I'm the Man Right Now star of the series, this is a tough one. They did win a game, so it should be easier than your typical they got swept, Evan. There should be no positive. I think that Carson Benj is a fair candidate. He went 3-for-11 in this series and drove in 3 runs. Bo Bichette, believe it or not, went 4-for-11, but they didn't feel very impactful. The other one is Juan Soto. Juan Soto didn't play in the first game, which is a negative that he wasn't out there, but he hit a home run in game 2. The 2-run home run at least gave us a pulse, a hope, down 6-2. And he hit the home run in the first inning that kind of set the tone for this game. So Soto ended up going 3-for-7 with 2 home runs and 3 RBIs. From a pitching perspective, there really isn't anybody that jumps out at you. I mentioned that the Met bullpen in the finale of this series, everybody kind of struggled, even if they were able to eventually make the big pitch. A scoreless inning out of Devin Williams, inning and a third out of Luke Weaver, inning and a third out of Brooks Raley. 2/3 of an inning, but a run given up by Tobias Myers. Jonah Tong wasn't brilliant. 3 2/3 innings, a run, though it was unearned. The open by Brazoban. And in terms of the pitching in the 2 previous games, Jonathan Pintero deserves some love, and I'll certainly give it to him, but I can't necessarily give him the I'm the Man Right Now. I think ultimately the I'm the Man Right Now is Juan Soto. And it's a reminder that they need Juan Soto. They need him badly. And that's a part of what made Monday suck so much. I almost wanted to hurt his chances because he didn't play Monday. And I guess that helps his chances or reminds you how valuable he is. But not having him hurts so much. And he was ill. How ill was he? What kind of fever did you have, Juan, when you're missing 2 days? I feel like I can laugh about it because it's nothing serious. But he is... Excuse me. He is playing hurt, as you can see. It feels like that wrist bothers him all the time. But I think Juan Soto is the I'm the Man Right Now. I mean, he hit a home run in each game. The 2-run shot in game 2 gave him a pulse. The home run in game 3 set the tone for the game. He got another base hit in the 6th inning, started a rally even if it didn't work out. Reached base in the 7th with the catcher's interference. Oh, yeah. So the catcher's interference. I got to say it because aren't we all thinking it? In the 7th inning of a close game, at this point, the Mets have taken a 2-run lead. They have 2 on and 2 out. And Juan Soto, initially you thought maybe was hit by the pitch. It wasn't. It was catcher's interference. And it was catcher's interference. But isn't there a part of you that says, hey, Juan, pretend like there wasn't catcher's interference because we'd rather you hit than go to first base and load the bases up for Mark Vientos? I thought that. And I don't normally think that with Soto because I'm always good with him drawing walks. Just draw walks. That's fine. Get on base a million times. It improves the chances of scoring runs. But I think in that specific situation, 2 on, 2 out, up by 2, Vientos, the human rally killer, is on deck. I wanted Soto up. I didn't want Juan Soto getting a catcher's interference. So that was one of those cases where I was like, come on, man. Come on. Come on, Juan, pretend like you weren't hit by that pitch. But he didn't do that. This is from Howard, who wanted to chime in on the Rico, I'm the Man Right Now star of the series and the net negative. Howard writes, I know you're hesitant to ever go after Nolan, but he deserves it. You know, I'm glad I read this right now. I just gave it to him for the second time in 3 weeks, hesitant to go after him. I've ripped him plenty. I also anointed him, which was probably a mistake. The other candidates besides Nolan, David Peterson, Mark Vientos, both for poor hitting and pitching. Not Beatty, though it's a guarantee Hoff will push for that. Besides scoring two runs in the series, he actually played pretty good defense at third base. For the star, Juan Soto is the clear winner. Honorable mention to Carson Bench. Good, Howard. We're on the same page. I think that everything you wrote, I just did and nailed. So we're in a good place. Juan Soto, you are the man right now. Nolan McClain, you are the net negative. This three-game series against the Miami Marlins, I can do the same song and dance about they need to sweep them. But they really do. I don't think anyone in their right mind thinks that they will, but when you look at the Mets' schedule coming up, the Mets have just played a relatively soft schedule, and they have played a soft schedule for a very long time. I know the Reds are an above 500 team. The Marlins are a sub 500 team who you actually passed before you played them over the weekend. The Nationals are a 500 team. The Yankees are good. The Tigers stink. The Diamondbacks, when they faced them, were right around 500. The Rockies stink. The Angels stink. We mentioned the Nationals. The Rockies, the Twins. Since late April, really for the last month, they haven't played a lot of good teams. You know, it's the Yankees and not much else. After they play the Miami Marlins, the Mets schedule is about to get brutal. And that's why, to a lot of us, it's too late. Doesn't mean we're not going to watch and hope we're wrong, but that they really needed to take advantage of the teams that they were facing. And obviously they didn't, to the point where they went backwards. Now sitting at 10 games under 500. But they have these three games against Miami. It'll be Freddie Peralta, Christian Scott, Nolan McClain over the weekend against them. They're going to face Max Meyer, who looked great when they saw him last weekend. Tyler Phillips, who's not really an opener, but a starter who won't go deep into games. And then they're going to face Jensen Junk. So they're not seeing Sandy Alcantara, which wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. He's had a terrible year. But then again, guys with terrible years killed the Mets. Listen to who they play after that. The Seattle Mariners in Seattle, the Padres in San Diego. So there's your fourth West Coast trip, as it seems. Seattle and San Diego. They come home to face the Cardinals, having a good year. The Braves, having the best year. The Reds again. The Phillies, the Cubs, assuming they've turned it around, the Phillies, the Blue Jays, and the Braves. And that takes you right near the All-Star break. Takes you until the first week of July. That is a brutal schedule. And that is where, unless something drastically changes, and I can't see how it's going to, they're going to probably end up 20 games under 500. Like, this isn't going to get better. Again, glad they won, glad they salvaged the last game, and baseball's a funny game, right? Now, they'll go play good teams and play well. Sure, that could happen, but it's probably not going to happen. So when I say they got to sweep the Miami Marlins, yeah, they're about to play a lot of really good teams. So sweep them. Are they going to? No. Are they even going to win that series? Probably not. But, yeah, the lost season continues, if you will, coming up with these three games against the Miami Marlins. As always, we tell you to subscribe to the Rico Bronya. Our next episode will be 700. And maybe that next episode will be Sunday, recapping a series against the Marlins. But as you know, and you probably know this already, it's probably not going to be. Because we pop out Ricos every couple of days when you least expect it. Sometimes instant reactions to games that deserve it. Sometimes just to talk to you. So make sure you've subscribed to the Rico Bronya. You will never miss an episode. If you don't see it for a few days on Spotify or Odyssey, that means there's something wrong with their app. Because we were always popping out Ricos every couple of days. You could also kind of make sure it's there by subscribing to the WFAN page on YouTube. Because that's where you could always see your Rico Bronyas live. We appreciate you listening. We appreciate you hanging out and really hanging in there as the Mets continue this horrific season. Thank you for listening to Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.